This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Today we are going to speak with Alan New, the man who knows. Haven't you always wanted to talk with a guy like that? I mean, you ever want to know something, you want to talk to someone who knows something. So this is the guy, apparently, who knows. He's taken that moniker from Alexander, who was one many years ago who had performed on stage and done a Q&A type of a routine, basically. There's been a lot written about Alexander, and you can find a lot of his posters online, and I've got a couple of them hanging in my house here. It's an iconic poster of Alexander, and he has always been known as the man who knows. And as time goes by, it seemed like an appropriate thing for Alan New to appropriate and use then for a tagline for himself. And so, in fact, if you Google the man who knows, you'll find his name actually above Alexander in the posters. And that's something that he has taken a long time in order to try to get that search engine optimization to get his name pushed up. Well, anyhow, I'm getting way ahead of myself. He's going to talk about that and so much more. He's also the star of the television series of specials that was on TLN, and the show was called The Mysterious World of Alan New. He's also performed aboard cruise ships and in Las Vegas, and he has worked in all kinds of corporate events as well as being a college entertainer, and just has a world of experience. And he is here to share some of that with us. He has been on a lecture tour across the United States, which is a little bit unusual because he has been typically working and making money, actually, performing, and so hasn't really had the opportunity to get out and share his ideas with magicians and mind readers or mentalists. And so, again, he's been on a tour here of late across the U.S., and so when he came through Houston, I had a chance to sit down and chat with him for quite a while. Hang around after the episode is over. We've got some things to talk about, including the winner of the contest from the Richard Osterlund DVD for Eerie, which is his newest DVD, plus that Alan has offered something that he is going to give away that you can find out at the end of the podcast, how you can register to win one of his products as well. So let me introduce the man who knows, Alan New, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And today we have as our guest Mr. Alan New. Hey there, Alan.
Hey.
Okay, get things straight here, because you spell your name A-L-A-I-N, like train, Elaine, I guess. But I know people ask you all the time. That's one of the things you also...
How do you pronounce your name?
Yeah, you get... So what is...
So
what
my
do you
name
prefer?
Is pronounced like the French pronounce Alain, and so it's Alain, but Alain. But
are you French?
It's funny. My father. My father is Vietnamese, and so there's a lot of French connection with regards to that. I had this assistant who worked for me for many years, who's actually from San Antonio, and she was just one of those alpha female women, and she started calling me Alan all the time, and it was just like, Alan, come here. And she would just say this over and over again, and it permeated everyone's skulls.
Because they heard her saying that.
It got to the point where my family was calling me Alan, and I was calling myself Alan, and so suddenly I became Alan New, and that's how that shifted from Alan to Alan.
I know some people, for an example, their names are James or whatever. They just like, don't call me Jim or Jimmy. My name is James. It's not Michael. I mean, not Mike. It's Michael or whatever. And so you don't really don't have a preference. I mean, it's kind of like it doesn't grate on your ear saying, I wish they'd call me by my real pronunciation. So
No. You know, Denny was used to, Denny's like one of the closest guys to me in the world of magic. And,
Denny.
And he calls him Denny Haney.
Yeah.
Right. And he calls me Al all the time. Al! And so he got tired of figuring out what he wanted to call me, so it just turned to Al.
I like that. You know, it's funny that Banachek's name, of course, is Steve Shaw, but he goes by Banachek all the time. And it's kind of funny because Johnny Thompson calls him Banny. And some other guys, you know, call him Banny, too. And it's, I don't know that he likes that particularly. Okay, I'll take it. It's just my perception. I whenever they say that, it kind of blinks, and I just kind of think, oh, you know, okay.
I always call him Ban.
Yeah.
You can't come in here. You're banned. You're banned. Okay. You're a deodorant. You're banned. Anyhow, you, a lot of things to talk about. You had a television show that was some years ago, and how did that come about? What was the name of the show?
It's called The Mysterious World of Alain New.
Alain, okay. And is that something that you had always wanted to do that was like on your bucket list since you were a little child or something?
Yeah, you know, it really was. And
What year was
it? It was back in 2005, 2006. Oh, okay. And essentially it was, I mean, I think that everyone who's a performer at heart wants to be on TV and
or Las
have
Vegas
their own
or whatever,
television
yeah.
show and
yeah.
whatnot. And so I just sort of see it as part of the rise of being a performer or entertainer is to be able to eventually get that opportunity to have a television show. And mm-hmm. So yes, indeed, that was one of my goals in life and stuff. And so,
did you start writing it in your mind? I mean, like at an early age or over years? Or?
I should have.
In hindsight, there are a lot of things. So, what's some advice or tips that you can give people then who might want to do that?
Yeah, definitely put it together in advance and try to put together as much material as possible because the TV monster will literally eat all of your material as uh-huh. quickly as you can write it. And I thought of myself as a pretty creative guy, and I had yeah. a lot of creative friends who I felt were also able to pull that together. And so that was a challenge for us because I thought I was going to have a chance to actually write the show before we started filming. But and at the same time, you know, being kind of conservative in terms of the way I like to, you know, plot things out, is I thought that, I didn't want to start writing a whole bunch of stuff and then find out that the show wasn't going to happen. So mm-hmm. I purposely didn't write my show before the contract was signed, even though I knew that there was this looming possibility. And part of it was literally disbelief in the fact that this was actually
really
going to happen.
Yeah.
It's like, am I really going to be on TV? That's crazy, right?
Yeah,
that doesn't
yeah.
make any sense to me. So I was just like, I was kind of, you know, I was a very busy entertainer at the time as well. So, I mean, we're talking like 2004 when all of this stuff was actually, 2003, 2004 was when we were talking about putting it together.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, I was literally just doing like, you know, 50 colleges a year and then plus corporate events. And mm-hmm. plus, I mean, these were the golden years for
yeah.
entertainers. And so I was literally traveling all over the place. I was constantly busy. I was constantly booked, and it was very difficult for me to think about sitting down and writing a TV show during that time, just because I was always busy. And so I thought to myself, well, we're gonna sign the contract, and then they're gonna give me a certain amount of time to like start filming and stuff.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. So we signed the contract, and they said, "Are you ready to go in 3 days?" And I was like, "Whoa!" And so suddenly I'm furiously writing all of that material, and calling my friends and asking for favors and pulling, you know, for consultants to join me on the journey and stuff. And it was crazy. You know, I had John Riggs as one of my main consultants. Mm-hmm. I had Doc Hilford come in and help me. Brad Henderson from here in Austin
yeah.
helped me out a little bit. It was a serious endeavor to kind of pull it together and try to get as much material and written material. Bob Fitch was like basically my acting coach on the
yeah.
entire thing. And, off the top of my head, I mean, I had a lot of friends who fortunately, you know,
you can call on at the last minute. To
yeah.
help,
gave yeah. up their time and gave up their energy to really help me pull it together. And I had no idea that it was going to be that little time
mm-hmm.
to literally bring together, you know, four hour long episodes. And so, you know, 4 hour long episodes
yeah.
really
a lot
meant
of material.
They wanted 20 effects per hour, which basically meant that I needed to come up with 80 effects. And, you know, mm-hmm. we are as entertainers used to putting together, you know, material in which we can live off of like a solid 12 for mm-hmm. the rest
with
of our lives.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So it's like, 12 effects, that's all I need. Not if you're in the television world. If you're in the television world, they'll eat 80 different effects with the express intention to like to edit away 6 to 8 of them per episode. So it's like, you know, they want 20 effects, they'll probably put in like 12 to 14.
Okay.
And so It's serious work. And, you know, on top of that, being a mentalist and coming from the standpoint of not a magic television show, but a television show that was mentalism, also was a challenge, just because, you know, again, we didn't have enough time to write it. Had we had enough time to write it, we probably would have been able to, you know, make something a little bit more, you know, string together in a more cohesive manner. But instead, we're just coming up with effects. Let's come up with as many psychometry effects as possible. Let's come up with as many blindfold effects as possible. Let's come up with as many, direct mind reading. You know, there's just like so many different forms of doing this stuff. And we were just reaching and grabbing for as much as we could get, just because we had zero time to actually pull it together. Mm-hmm. So that was truly exciting. And it was truly, a whirlwind journey, and we were literally coming up with ideas sometimes the night before the actual filming was taking place. And, you know, a lot of our most brilliant moments would take place like hours before we would actually film.
When you're really under fire.
And, it was probably, you know, it was an experience that I'm glad that I had, but I wish I had more time to do it.
You know, I know that television is voracious. It has an appetite that is always like a shark that keeps moving and eating and wanting more. So I was thinking about that for an example many years ago when Doug Henning was on television. He had done a Zigzag, and everybody said, wow, that's fantastic. But, okay, now we've seen that. What else you got? And so I was like, but that's such a great illusion. You could, obviously, guys are still doing Zigzag. And the point being is that everything that you do is great, but what else you got for me? It's kind of like a 9-to-5 job where people or your company would say, you know, what have you done for me today? You know, it's just, you can't necessarily rest on whatever you've done before. You got to have new sales. You got to, you know, keep moving forward. I mean, that's part of business as well, but you're always trying to exceed what you had already done. But nowhere is that more evident, I think, than in the entertainment industry when the media is involved, because they get to publish all of that or to show that on television or wherever, movies and whatnot, that the next thing has to be bigger and better, which goes to the point that you had said something earlier to me about how that they almost were trying to kill you, because that they were looking for these 3 points in each one of the shows. It's like that you're building up to this point, and that each show has to be bigger and better. And it's like, okay, what have you got for me now? What have you got for me now?
Well,
you
know? My production company was actually a very solid production company. I'm going to give them, you know, a big hats off to them in terms of just keeping it together and keeping it organized. And they're very good at doing that. You know, we ran into a few, you know, personal problems and stuff like that, and probably had to do with like an overprotective wife and a network that really wanted me to put together dangerous, death-defying types of stunts that mm-hmm. were making my wife more and more nervous.
Nervous, just
because,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
When you see celebrity pop stars and people like that on TV, and they're put under the pressure that they're put into, you know, Britney Spears shaves off all her hair all of a sudden, you know, people start to do drastic things, just to make the network happy or to rebel against the network because they're unhappy. And
okay.
So there's a lot of, you know, things that will happen, you know, where, and so, you know, I mean, entertainers will literally risk their lives in order to make a network happy, or entertainers will, you know, shave off all their hair or do something that literally rebels against their desire to make the network happy because they're just feeling this huge pressure.
You were talking about David Blaine ingesting gasoline.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how many of you out there are going to drink a gallon of gasoline in front of everyone just to, like, you know, and probably lose a couple
shorten
of years
life,
off
yeah.
your shorten your
yeah.
life just to make the network happy.
And that goes way back. Of course, I remember hearing stories about Harry Houdini about how that he would dislocate his shoulder in order to get out of straitjackets because he could. But even if you could, why would you? I mean, there are only a few people who will actually go to some physical pain or impairment in order to get to that limelight.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Is
I always
really
thought that
it?
Was a myth, but
that's what I've heard.
But right. I mean, but you know, I think that it's important if you're going to be an entertainer and you're going to give to your art. You know, I'd say go ahead and feel free to talk about how you're overgiving to the art because nobody wants to hear it more than those people who actually are paying to see it. You know, I mean, they want to know that you're actually, you know, that you're actually giving up a piece of yourself to make this happen, because they like to see that kind of commitment.
Well, to make commercial television in particular, I think once that kind of drama, in order to spike it, just to keep people after the commercial, to come back and stay tuned, as opposed, let's say, to a pay-per-view or something where that it might build up and then you have a cliffhanger at the end of the show, as opposed to a cliffhanger at the end of every segment before the commercial. So right. That's why I could see why they want, you know, three or four different kinds of things during that 1 hour special, you know.
Right, right. It was interesting just because, you know, they called them tent poles. So basically the highest point of the show would be this point in which there would be some kind of looming threat or something like that, mm-hmm. that you've got to get through in order to make this work, and then we'll return after this.
Well, what were a couple of things that were most dangerous, or that even you worried about, or you won't ever do again?
I had to do a blindfolded mumbledy peg. So, I mean, I had to be blindfolded, mm-hmm. and have a knife and essentially basically do mumbledy peg with a knife while blindfolded.
For those who don't know mumbledy peg,
basically it's the old Marine Corps type thing where you put your hand down on a table and just take a knife and just basically stab between your fingers and try to get faster and faster and try to change patterns and try to like do things to essentially prove that you've got what it takes to be able to do something like that. Mm-hmm. I remember being under so much stress during that time. And I remember Bob Fitch being there with me.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, we've got to do this. And I remember just having like this I don't care type of feeling, and I just went for it. And I got pretty fast. I mean, you can actually YouTube that and, you know.
You're
right. It wasn't speeded up. I mean, there was moments in which they did purposely speed it up, but you can tell the difference between the times in which it speeded up, uh-huh. and the times in which I'm actually doing it. It literally was one of those moments in which number one, I didn't care anymore. I mean, I was like under so much stress that I just totally didn't care if I just stabbed right through my finger. But at the same time, I just wanted to get this over with and done with. And so it was just sort of like, okay, let's do it. Okay, let's do it. And then
boom, boom, boom,
boom, boom, boom. And I start doing it. And Bob Fitch is like, I was so scared for you. It was done here in Texas, actually in this some way out small town in Texas. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about working with the production companies is that oftentimes I would be put under these like totally stupid conditions in which I would think that we're supposed to go in one particular direction, but then they would change the game on us because of some weird contractual thing or something like that would happen. And so, you know, instead of doing an acid test, or an acid roulette type of of potentially drinking acid for a bunch of students in a chemistry lab, which is what I wanted.
Yeah.
They put me out in the middle of freaking nowhere in like a town of people who were, I think it was at a car mechanics type of place. And everyone there they only spoke Spanish there.
And they didn't know what the heck you were doing.
And furthermore, they didn't care if I drank the acid. So
it's like, yeah, we hope he does. Yeah, we'll see something here.
Let's see. So it was very unnerving for me to be able to do that. And then on top of that, I'd say that, there was another time in New Orleans in which we were supposed to do this
voodoo thing or something? Or?
Well, the voodoo thing was actually worked out. It was it was basically contacting the dead, and it was all based on Marie Laveau and Marie Laveau's grave. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that we're at Marie Laveau's grave, and you're supposed to, and you know, the patter line was, you know, Marie Laveau spent her entire life contacting the dead. Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder now that she's dead, whether
we can
or not
contact her.
We can contact her, right? Yeah. And so that was the entire premise of the effect. And suddenly, we're put in this haunted house, and we're no longer at Marie Laveau's grave. And it's like the house is haunted by people who I've never heard of before, and I have no connection to it. And so suddenly, I have to like do this, you know. Silly
but this was mandated by
thing.
The network saying we're going to change it because the executives think this will play better or something.
Yeah, it was basically a production company, and I don't know, you know, because it's just like the higher ups.
They just tell you, and all you know is here I go, huh?
Exactly. So there was a lot of like last minute changes and stuff like that were just you know, a little annoying to me. Today's world in television is a completely different world, in my opinion, because right now we're at a point in television in which it doesn't really know what it is. TV now has YouTube channels.
Yeah, it has to compete with YouTube, yeah.
And TV can get internet these days. So, yeah. I mean, so we're living in a completely different world in which our iPhones can create television shows and we can do things
That's right.
on our own. And we so whereas back, you know, 15 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, you had to kind of rely on these higher end production companies. I find that it's interesting that there are certain television shows that you can see and that are very, very popular. Like, for instance, MTV's Catfish, which is all about like falling in love over the internet and
people
and then meeting the person that you fell in love with.
Right.
I mean, it's a very interesting show to me, not just because they have a hook that's really cool because, you know.
No pun intended.
What's really interesting, right, exactly. What's really interesting about it is that, you know, you never know what's on the other side of your love interest
right.
who you fell in love with online. And what's really interesting is that it's never the same story. It's always something slightly different. Yeah,
huh.
You know,
those
people who have never seen it might probably say, oh, well, it's all about just this thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it is all about just this thing. But the thing about that is that it's always different. There's
little
always
nuances.
Some, yeah, there's little nuances. There's little, you know, sometimes it's like somebody who's totally belligerent and not the same sex and that you're expecting. And sometimes it's a person who, you know, sometimes it's just not right and, you know, know, the relationship goes in another direction. Sometimes they fall in love. So I mean, it is a very, very.
You never know what's going to end.
You don't know what's going to happen.
So there is a build and then a payoff.
Yeah, at the end. And
yeah.
and so and
perfect
it's always,
for television.
Exactly. And furthermore, it's perfect for production because what I see when I'm watching it are basically two dudes with like little tiny cameras, basically taking.
Kind of like the old Blair Witch Project movie kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's on that level. You know, it's sort of like very, very low-tech production, but at the same time, it's so long as the sound and the video is good, then you've got yourself a potential show. So long as the content is good, then you've got yourself a potential show. And you know, so there's we're living in a new age right now where so long as you can create good content, then you might have the potential for being able to pull together a good show. But here's the catch. The thing is that these days, as a performer who does mentalism or hypnosis or magic or any of that stuff, I feel like
a mystery entertainer.
Yeah, a mystery. You know, psychic ghost hunting, or you know, or you know. Spirit mediums and stuff like that. I mean, you see it all happening on TV, you know, Bigfoot chasers and all of that stuff. You have to make it really interesting, you know, like sometimes I'll have to say that I'm glad that stuff is interesting enough that the concept, you know, ends up on TV, but when you watch it, it's not as interesting as you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to name any particular names, but I will say that in that handful that I basically just described, you know, it's all got potential, but not all of it can grab you, and not all of it has the ability to literally stop a channel surfer and make them watch. And I'd say that is your key. If you are looking to put together a TV show, then what you want is a show that will stop channel surfers. You want channel surfer stoppers.
Sure.
And so when they're surfing
something
through,
dramatic.
Suddenly they're looking at something. It could be dramatic. It could be just interesting. It could be, you know, I mean, it could just give content that is appealing to people as they're just flying by on the channels.
Right.
And if you can pull that off, you know, if you're able to pull that off in some level, then you've got yourself a show and it's something that's worth putting together. But one of the worst things that you can do is, you know, as in my experience, is not be prepared and just work off of your own gut and your own wit and be able to pull together with as little, you know, time to prepare as possible. I'd say just do it, you know, be as,
proactive and try to put something together. I think I don't see why what the downside is of trying to put together a show, even if it doesn't come about. At least you have a lot of great ideas you can work on and maybe pull from later to add to a show that you're going to be doing live or professionally. you know.
Yeah. I mean, but my show, you know, you saw me perform at HU. I mean, it's like, it's very minimal, but at the same time, it's very exciting, and I can pull off a standing ovation show, you know, in front of, you know, an hour
with
hour
little or nothing, group,
with very, very little, and and I feel like that's my talent, is I can do a lot with a little, and I'm able to engage audiences. I'm able to keep them interested. I'm able to entertain them. I'm able to give them an experience that truly feels like they can broaden their own mind and can do amazing things. Whether you're a magician or whether you're a mentalist or not, you know, I mean, when you're seeing me perform, you're basically given a show in which it makes you think about what are the possibilities.
Right.
And that to me is the essence of what I do as a mind reader, as a mentalist, as a hypnotist.
Right. I was going to say, getting then to doing college shows and that kind of thing, and talking about kind of the heyday when it was better, but let me just kind of finish up with that I'm assuming that it must have been through your agent who had booked you then for the college circuit and everything, who had also made contact with the television studios, because a lot of people might want to be on television, but it's like, well, how do I go about doing that? I don't have an agent, or I don't have contact with
the network.
Or anything.
No, you know, everything, it's funny, my manager out of Las Vegas, Clinton Billups, would probably say exactly what I'm about to say right now. I tend to always have this, you know, what would Clinton say in a time like this? to be an entertainer in this business and constantly rise is, and constantly have that, you know, instead of falling into that a plateau of some sort, you need to constantly build your marquee value. So, I mean, you're constantly doing something. I mean, if you're a corporate entertainer and you just get stuck in the rut of just doing corporate events, you might be successful, but you're not necessarily building your marquee value. You're not,
right.
You're not actually like taking it to the next level each time. So, I mean, and how do you do that? And the answer is you've got to do different things, and you've got to constantly just broaden your horizons and constantly show the world that you're able to do these different things.
So, that doesn't mean being on the social network and trying to show everybody that way. You mean physically actually being out there and doing it and working it.
and basically working the Google ranking more than anything.
Really?
It's basically so that
SEO?
If Google, yeah, I mean, I don't use any of, you know, I don't pay any of the exorbitant search engine optimization costs. I basically just use the concept of constantly doing something different so that people, when they Google me, they'll see me doing, you know, these different things. So,
and
I mean,
if they Google a man who knows, you always come up first.
These days, you know, I've topped the Alexander poster, so I'm very excited about that. That's a major life accomplishment.
Yeah. But it's basically going out and doing it and getting to have that kind of credibility, so that way when they go to the network, they're saying, oh, I've heard of that guy, or he's got these kinds of credentials.
Right, and everything that I do these days, from corporate events to, you know, to private parties to, you know, to private parties for, you know, the
boards of directors and
people who are celebrities and people who are, you know, higher up in the rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I do that sort of thing, it's really because they can see that, you know, I've done this, I've done that, you know, I've performed at presidential inaugurations,
right.
I was just headlining on the Norwegian cruise ships, I used to headline in Las Vegas, you know, and all of that stuff just sort of starts to build and build and
exactly.
build and you know, and then even, and every month I'm trying to do something that's different. Like even this lecture tour that we're going on, you know, it's being publicized mm-hmm. as like this big nationwide book signing tour, you know,
right.
and so,
right.
so as we do this, it's essentially the world is seeing me travel from one place to the other through social network and stuff like that. And it's building my reputation by simply doing that. And
mm-hmm.
so, I mean, that was this month. Last month I was, you know, performing for the Best of the Washington City Paper. The month before that I was performing at the International Spy Museum and headlining there with my show, The ESPN Espionage.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always doing something that's kind of shifting and changing and morphing and
essentially
and sort of building onto what I am able to do. And it gets to the point where people say, okay, well, so he's an expert at these things,
sure.
you know, at things that are consciousness related, mentalism related, hypnosis related.
Well, just like your book that you had written.
Mysticism related, you know, exactly. So State of Mind was my book that essentially wraps all of that together. You know, I thought to myself, you know, the reason why people love mentalism is not because, you know, it's not the, necessarily the same reason why they love magic.
That's correct.
I think that the reason why they love mentalism is because it actually refers to something that's much greater.
Mm-hmm.
And so is there a way to actually wrap mentalism in with inexplicable phenomenon, with consciousness studies, with mysticism in such a way that makes people understand that these are the reasons why they love watching this and they love understanding these things, and is there some kind of understanding that we can get from reading about this in this book? And the answer is, you know, I think that if you read the book, you will actually find that there are direct correlations between each of those, you know, subject matters and mentalism and ways of being able to interact with these things in a way that a mentalist might, you know, because
it's much more thought-provoking than magic, because magic, as Michael Lamard said, is kind of bubblegum for the eyes. I mean, something's kind of, it's fun. Well, I know it's sleight of hand. I know that magic isn't real, but mentalism, it kind of makes you expand your mind and think about the possibilities, I think.
Exactly. And I feel that that's what I try to do in the book. I try to give them something that's tangible, because in my opinion, mentalism is any type of a demonstration that is entertaining and can entertain you that mm-hmm. refers to the powers of the mind. So that can sometimes be an illusion, but then it draws up the bigger question, you know, can illusions work in tandem with reality?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say that the big, you know, mistake that many magicians have is that everything's an illusion, that, mm-hmm. you know, there are things that we just don't understand because we're being fooled or tricked by it and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd say that, you know, from a mentalist standpoint, that would be faulty logic, just because I feel that illusions do work in tandem with reality, and sometimes really inexplicable, amazing things do happen. And you know, is it possible that some of what we've come up with as art has influenced the future in some way? And the answer is yes. There's a lot of weird stories that I can draw up from, you know, from artists who are famous to art, you know, to other people that have to do with, something being thought of before that ends up happening later on and in a completely inexplicable way. So, you know, for instance, this guy, Morgan, I can't remember his name right now, but he wrote this book, The Wreck of the Titan,
mm-hmm.
and The Wreck of the Titan is basically about a cruise ship about 14 years before the Titanic was ever built.
Okay.
It's about a cruise ship that was the largest cruise ship in the world that was touted as being unsinkable, that ended up traveling north filled with passengers up into the North Atlantic, that crashed into an iceberg and that sank and most everybody died. And so this happens 14 years before the Titanic was ever built.
Oh, like, so, a prediction almost.
Almost like a crazy prediction written up in a story, right? Edgar Allan Poe wrote the narrative of Gordon Pym from Nantucket, which is basically a story about sailors going off into sea and suddenly finding themselves lost and then realizing that if they didn't want to starve to death, they would have to cannibalize one of them in the Edgar Allan Poe spirit.
Yeah.
In order to, they drew lots, and the person who drew the bad lot was a guy named Richard Parker. And so now, 46 years later, suddenly there's legal furor happening on international waters because these sailors get lost at sea and they realize they need to cannibalize one of them in order to survive, and they drew lots, and the person who picked the bad lot was named Richard Parker.
Oh my God.
Right? So I mean,
So,
these are crazy things, and obviously there are other fascinating things. I mean, obviously Star Wars has predicted many strange things in
the telephones that we use, you know, cell phones.
Yeah, you're
Star
right.
Trek.
Star Trek has predicted cell phones, sliding glass doors that we completely take for granted these days.
Right.
You know, you know, all kinds of scanners, stuff like that. I mean, Star Trek predicted a lot of stuff that's mm-hmm. more on the more positive end.
Yeah.
You know, 2001 Space Odyssey had HAL. Yeah. Now we've got Siri. Now
Minority
we've got
Report also is another one. Yeah,
right. We've got you know, Star Wars predicted a couple of weird things. I mean, like that one moon that floats around Saturn looks just like the Death Star. There's a
Alderaan.
No, it's I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. It's like, it starts with the letter I. But look it up. It's a crazy-looking planet with a ridge, I mean a moon with a ridge around it with a giant crater on it just like the Death Star, and it looks just like the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a strange craft that was discovered in the Sargasso Sea or something like that that fell into the sea, and it looks like some sort of a space alien ship. It looks just like the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
And so there's like these weird things that I feel like, you know, I mean, I don't know whether these are spacecrafts. I don't know anything about them, except that I do know that, you know, I don't think that Star Wars was actually thinking about those things when they came up with those,
right,
when they came up with those designs. And yet here they are in like real life in this strange way. So, I mean, so I do feel that there are things that are inexplicable that we can hearken to at times and be fascinated with the fact that it might not be a coincidence, that there might be something a little bit more synchronistic, that there might be something that's a little bit more, you know, consciousness related to all of that than one would think who believes in things that are just illusions that just fool us by trickery or by coincidence or, you know, by things that that happen naturally because sometimes things just happen that way.
You know, I mentioned the Minority Report, and the director of that was wanting to come up with some ideas that might be plausible, things that might happen in the not-too-distant future. So that way, when it comes about, it's like, oh, well, I can kind of see it going that way. Maybe they're working on that right now. And our mutual friend, Alan Gittleson, I went to his studio, and he was showing me about some of these things. And when the director had come in, he showed me some things that were still written on the wall, but ideas that with your hand that you put on these gloves and you can move things around, you know, or that you – it's kind of like the touch screen. You'd accept it's in midair kind of holographic images and things. And he was showing me how they'd worked on these kinds of things. And it was just fascinating to think about what's going to be happening in the future. We're going off on a completely different tangent over here, which is really fascinating. But I was going to ask you about school shows. And also, as far as working back then, you said you were doing like 50 or so colleges. What has changed, and what's the dynamic now with colleges? Because I've heard some people saying, I'd like to get into the college market, and how do you do that? And I'm saying, well, there's NACA, and you can go to these shows, apparently, to try to showcase your act, but then you are being selected among all these other acts. What other acts are you competing against, or who are you finding are your biggest competitors now?
Well, for colleges, I've stopped doing colleges for a little while, and it's really, really just because, because things just went in another direction for me. I ended up on this cruise ship for 5 months. I ended up, I was dealing with homeschooling my daughter and stuff like that. So, I mean, there are reasons why I kind of left the college market. I'd like to step back in probably sometime soon, but
it's still a good and solid and viable, lucrative market.
It's very competitive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so you have to stay on it and you have to stay committed to be in it in order to be successful and stuff like that. And that was one of the reasons why I stepped out, was because I realized that with everything else that was going on in my life, it was going to be hard for me to stay committed to doing something.
Well,
like
you said that Danny Haney is a good friend of yours, and he has told me the story many times about how that he was top of the game, I guess, on the college market, and that he got out thinking, okay, this is on its way down, and I'm going to open up a magic shop because that's the future, the brick and mortar magic shops. And he said
that?
Yeah. And he said, man, I didn't know, first of all, that was a complete bad decision, because obviously that the college circuit continued to grow and brick and mortar went down. So he's one of the few brick and mortar shops, one of the best around, of course. But he said, yeah, I wish I would have stuck around just a few more years, you know, in the college market.
Yeah, I think he was getting I think he went crazy for a little bit, because, you know, it's funny, because when I was young, he used to tell me to never open up a retail business.
And what does he do?
And yeah, exactly. It was something that he literally instilled in my brain enough that you know, it affected me. I never wanted to open up a shop. I never wanted to do anything like that. You know, he was the guy who said that I should stop hanging out with magicians as well. So, I mean, it's funny because, he really told me, you know, he taught me a lot, and a lot of the stuff that he taught me, he decided not to do himself.
Didn't follow his own advice. Interesting. Now, you do workshops also each year. You said that there's usually some place in the world that you do a workshop, and it's fairly expensive. What, $1,000, $1,500 or something?
Yeah, it's like $1,500 a seat to talk about PK and metal bending.
And it's a one-day, two-day kind of a seminar,
workshop? It's a one-day, 8-hour-long seminar.
I remember you did that at at the Mindvention a few years ago in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm. I believe that we are setting it up for Mark D'Souza's in Philadelphia this year. We're off to a late start, so I'm hoping that things are still going as planned. But it is.
How many people do you typically have, or what's the limit?
We're looking for between 5 to 10, you know, mm-hmm. so it's a very intimate type of mm-hmm. environment, and it basically allows me to talk about what I do. It allows me to share with people my most recent findings, and you know, I feel that I continue to grow as a metal bender these days, just from my own research into my own self and what I've discovered I can do and stuff like that. So,
do you feel like what you do is different, or that you have something to add, or it just kind of gets lost among the rest with Banachek and Morgan Stribler?
I think both. Yes, it does get lost, and mm-hmm. and.
Yeah,
that's
Richard
okay.
Osler.
It's
a
okay
band is a band.
Me.
Yeah,
it's okay to me because I don't feel like
you're competing.
I don't feel like I'm competing.
Right.
But I will say this: the stuff that I do is different from what they do, and it's
a different method.
Yeah.
The method a lot of times are the same. It's a moment, isn't it? So it's a direction and misdirection has a lot to do with that.
It's basically a. It's you're concentrating your energy at the spoon and it's bending.
Yeah.
And so
just like that.
It's a completely different technique, and there are different principles, and you know, there are yes, both psychological principles, there are technical principles, and they work hand in hand in order to make what I do look like what it looks like. So,
well, you do have a little bit different philosophy, I think, than some mentalists. You talk a little bit about what your thoughts are on mentalism, clairvoyance, how you present yourself and your powers. What are your powers?
Well, I think that my powers are very much similar to everyone's powers. So the reason why I think people are interested in watching me perform mentalism is because when I talk about my powers, I'm talking about really everyone's powers. I'm talking about the fact that we all have unusual abilities that we might not fully recognize at this point. In fact, I talk about how the fact that our own skepticism of our powers might be the one thing that's holding ourselves back from our true potential.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's important to realize that, you know, we are something that's more than what we believe we are. And it's important to resonate with this idea that we have these abilities that can be real. And so now does mentalism make those things, is mentalism real? And the answer is, well, mentalism, just like all art forms, is an art form, and therefore it's an illusion of something that could be real. So, I mean, all art forms essentially make you reflect upon reality in some way. And mentalism makes you reflect upon the reality of your own powers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, whereas magic might make you reflect more on the fact that things might not be as they seem. I'd say that when people see magic, oftentimes it is a little bit cheeky, and it does have a tendency to make you wonder, okay, well, I guess things aren't as they seem, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it makes you realize that, you know, it couldn't be any other way. Whereas I'd say that mentalism attacks the subject matter in a different way, where it basically says, sometimes it is real. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
there is something that's real that's going on. And so the purpose of mentalism is to really make you grasp that notion that there are real things that happen that have yet to be fully understood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so my perspective on mentalism is to essentially always wrap into that. You know, I'm always trying to give people that experience that, you know, what we're doing here is something that it reflects upon the reality of us doing this thing, whether it be reading someone's mind, whether it be predicting the future, whether it be being clairvoyant, whether it be, you know, telekinesis and moving objects or bending metal with the mind. I mean, all of that stuff makes you, and in my opinion, particularly with that, I think that moving objects or bending metal, I'd say that in many ways sort of becomes its own metaphor for ourselves being able to bend and shape reality. And,
mm-hmm.
and so with our own energetic bodies, we are able to literally bend and shape reality as we know it. And mm-hmm. through our own willful intent, we're able to do these things. And it's, and it becomes, you know, obviously I can reach over here and I can move this pen from this place by picking it up and moving it. Mm-hmm. But, but that in and of itself does something, and it changes what's going on around here because I've just done this one thing. It changes the way we think, changes what we're thinking about. And in essence, it has this much larger scope than just me doing this. It has something that it makes us, it takes us to another level. And I think that that is essentially the idea of, you know, us being able to deliver to people the concept of the powers of the mind. And I'd say that there's a lot to think about with regards to that, whether it be just hypnosis and our ability to change our mental patterns, to make ourselves, you know, improve our abilities, to make ourselves stop our vices, to make ourselves, you know, even change the behavior of people around us by the way we behave. Mm-hmm. There's a, you know, it also alludes to the greater potential of like mysticism, things like the yin and yang, the I Ching, and things like that, that involve things that are more about the
outside of our known world, or
yeah, it's outside of physical our known world, and yet at the same time, it brings into question this idea that there's a field of consciousness that's moving from one person to the other, okay. and it's affecting people in different ways, and that we might be able to affect that field of consciousness in a particular way. So these are things that I actually discuss in my book, and I think that there are things that are relevant to reality because, you know, we're talking about how illusion affects reality. We're talking about how something that is, that we've come up with, an idea or something like that, affects reality in a way that is tangible, and a way that you can actually almost describe to a normal person, like a magician describes magic to another magician.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes the book interesting. I think that that's what makes the book, you know, State of Mind, by the way, available on Amazon and Kindle.
I was about to say, the title of the book is called State of Mind.
Yeah, State of Mind. It's called The Man Who Knows reveals the powers of mind over matter.
And it really is not just for mentalists or entertainers, but also for the general public, which is why it's available on Amazon. I'll put a link on the website here so people can click and find that
too. Oh, yeah, please do. When I think about my audience, I think, you know, I have a very widespread audience.
Yeah. Of all ages, too.
Yeah, I've got people who are magicians. I've got people who are mentalists. I've got hypnotists. I've got doctors and, you know, neuroscientists and then I've got
business
skeptics. I've got skeptics. I've got believers. I've got ninth graders. I've got, you know, it's literally running the gamut. And I don't want to give them something that they can't actually sink their teeth into. I want to be able to give my entire audience, everyone, something that they'll actually be able to read and appreciate and mm-hmm. realize that I've put in this great effort.
It's like 365 pages.
It's like 325 pages.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's a big chunk of material. And
how long did it take you to write that?
It took 9 months to write, 8 months to correct.
Wow. I'm amazed because I know typically it takes years to complete something like that. So you must have really been focused to get that down.
Yeah, I was, actually.
Interesting. A few things here. First of all, just kind of start to wrap up that you really don't, as we talked earlier, don't do lectures. I mean, this is just kind of an unusual kind of a thing on this lecture tour you're doing now because you're normally performing and out there working. And so that's why a lot of people haven't heard of you because, A, you don't hang around with magicians because Denny said not to be recommended that.
It's not entirely because of Denny. I mean, it really is just a matter of time and about energy and where I want to put that energy and stuff like that. And it's not that it has nothing to do with me disliking magicians or me not wanting to hang out with them for one reason or another. It's really just because, frankly, I've been having a blast, you know, going to different clubs and being able to
renew some friendships too.
To do this thing. And to renew some friendships as well. So, I mean, I feel that, you know, it's really just about, and I feel that my book was written partially so that I could step back into the magic world and give magicians something, you know, that is really you know, food for thought and something that, that they ought to consider, because it does kind of bring into question these much greater ideas and different, just a different perspective on the subject, wherein right now we're living in a world in which, you know, there is a great deal of, you know, perception towards skepticism of things that are magical and stuff like that, and critical thinking, which I'm all for. I think that it's important that we are critical when we think.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't think that that means that we should be closed-minded to other ideas. So that is, you know, that's where I stand as far as all of that's concerned.
But also, not having attended many conventions, my point being is that you're not booked as a performer or a lecturer at many conventions, because, again, that you're out working and wherever else.
This is my comeback tour. I'm coming back.
So it's going to be...
other day I was calling it my farewell tour, but no, this is my comeback tour.
You have your ups and downs, kind of like some days, oh, I'm not going to do this again, it's my farewell. Oh, that's just pretty good. Okay. Yeah, come back. Okay. It's the roller coaster of Milan New. With this, as we start to wrap up over here, let me ask you, as I always do my guests, because the title of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. And so what is your magic word? What is it that, maybe it doesn't have to be a word, it can be a phrase, a philosophy, what it is that makes you get up in the morning and do what you do?
Believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. That's the most, I mean, I know that's three words.
No, oh, that's okay. No. It's a philosophy, yeah. So believe in yourself. Does that mean that you, to have the confidence or to try new things, or what does that mean?
Well, it's kind of all of the above, but yeah, yeah. I would say do something that makes you believe in yourself. Do something that is important. Don't do things that waste your time. Mm-hmm. Do things that you really believe in order so that you can let that concept roll over to the next group that you perform for, or that mm-hmm. you affect, and that you that allows you to. I think that by doing that, you just gain power for yourself, and that you're kind of you move yourself up. You know, just like we're talking about our marquee value, all of those things can't be done unless you believe in yourself. That's
right.
It's all about expansion. It's all about building upon the things that you already know. Mm-hmm. And it's about taking your own belief to the next level, because, you know, if you're skeptical of what you, about yourself more than anything, then you're not going to make it to that next level. Mm-hmm. You need to believe in yourself. You need to believe in the things that might, that you don't know if it's going to happen, but you need to just have that belief. And, you know, it's something that I think that most athletes are very familiar with, and it's something that mm-hmm. I think that more entertainers should keep, you know, in their own thoughts as well.
Key to success right there. Very good. Thank you very much. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Milan New, and this is Scotty out. Well, I really want to thank Milan New for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. He was going to be one of the performers, along with Richard Osterlin, who was here on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, as a couple of performers and lecturers, and also we're going to be doing their workshops at the East Coast Mind Jam in Somerset, New Jersey. Unfortunately, that event has had to be canceled, but I'm glad that I had an opportunity to chat with these guys and to share their thoughts and their philosophy with you here on this podcast. I also want to particularly thank Milan for his ideas on television production, and if you guys are thinking about perhaps trying to get onto television, get a special going or something, the idea that was a takeaway for me, at least, was to make sure that you kind of have all your ducks in a row, and in particular, go ahead and have some of your ideas already jotted down, so this way that you're not having to wait and put out a fire at the last minute whenever that you get the green light and they say, yes, we're going to start filming in 3 days. It seems like that if you have all these things already ready to go, then you can start weeding them out and you can decide which best, and then also that you'll have a good repertoire of things that you may want to eventually kind of work on and to swap out and put into your B and C acts. Well, I'm kind of getting a little bit too much into detail over there, but again, I appreciate Milan giving us all those ideas. And speaking of thanking Milan for things, I want to thank him for a product that he has offered to a lucky winner of this week's contest, and that is a booklet that's about 40 pages long. It's called ESP Arcana.
10 Amazing Effects with 10 ESP Cards by Homer Arcana. And this will be available for the lucky randomly selected person who will enter the contest. If you'll just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you will see that you can put in your name and your email address, and your name will be randomly selected again from a spreadsheet among other contestants. And I also want to point out that this is going to be for free. That is, that it will be shipped to you domestically with no shipping charges. However, that if you live outside the United States, we will calculate whatever the foreign shipping is going to be and notify you, and you can make the decision of whether or not you wish to pay for that. And if you don't, then we will just do another drawing for a replacement winner. But I think that you'll probably want this book. It has a $50 retail value, so it's got some pretty good stuff in here. I want to also thank the Friends of the Magic Word, who, with their financial support, help us to defray production costs not only associated with the podcast from week to week, but also for the mailing charges that are associated with the gifts that are so generously donated by many of our guests here. And speaking of gifts and prizes that have been coming from our guests over the last few weeks, I think it's now time for us to announce the winner of the DVD called Eerie by Richard Osterlund. And the winner is Noel Berkofsky. Congratulations, Noel. That DVD will be coming your way shortly, along with a autographed copy of a photograph of Richard Osterlund. Thank you for entering the contest, and thank you also for all the others who have entered. And just because you didn't win, well, you get another opportunity to perhaps win in this next contest. So be sure to go to the podcast blog and enter the contest to win. Also, that over the past few weeks, I have been giving product reviews of some products that have been coming from Murphy's Magic Supplies. I had pointed out in the past that, of course, they are not responsible for any kind of commercial involvement whatsoever, and they are not a financial supporter of the Magic Word, but I do appreciate them sending me copies of some of these tricks that I have been reviewing, and I hope that you guys have been benefiting from some of my reviews. I have also decided a while back I was going to try to split them out and do mini episodes. That is, miniature episodes, I should say, or mini eps. And after a couple of weeks, I decided actually it's best that they go back into the podcast itself and kind of tag them on to the end of the podcast after we have spoken with the guest. But I don't want the podcast to go inordinately long, so I would like to try to keep these two within or about an hour in length. And so I will add these towards the end only if we have a little bit of time. I really don't want to deny our guests any of their time, so I'm going to give you guys the full impact and all the podcasts that I record with my guests. And when there's a little bit of time towards the end, I will give a review or two of some of the new products that are out and on the market. I think that's probably enough for this week, and I think that's probably a wrap. So until next time, stay well, get booked, and believe in yourself. This is Scotty out.